Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osmond on KLBB Club 1220. Another hour of a backwards trip in time, looking at some stories and story makers of the 70s, 80s, today, and whatever else I can find to talk about. James, how was Christmas?
Oh, Christmas was great. I got all sorts of stuff that I never expected.
That's great, and you're not even a kid.
I know. Every year it gets better and better. My Christmas presents get more adult. I love it.
Adult as in sophisticated, correct?
Most definitely.
Perfect.
Not that other kind of adult. Don't you try that.
Well, make sure we keep this a clean show. So, James, are you from Minnesota?
I am. I was born in Shoreview.
And have you moved away yet?
I have traveled, and I've lived in Japan. I've lived in Florida. I have lived, I'm in Roseville right now.
But you came back.
I did.
What drew you back?
Family.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. And I miss, being incredibly cold in the winter.
It's amazing that people ask us why we do it. And I think that it's a comfortable place to live above anything else. And I tried to go away for a special assignment for a couple of years, as I call it, and to a bigger city not far from here. And I was ready to come back after I was done.
Special assignment.
Yeah, we'll call it a special assignment.
That sounds a little mysterious.
It was pretty special, but I came back and had a good opportunity here. I think that when you watch TV and you watch the news and you watch people that have come and gone in our lives, not so much in our born blood family, but those that we've brought into our homes every day, a lot of these people, men and women, were not necessarily born here, but at some point they become part of Minnesota. Even those that were not born here, those who were not, did not grow up here, they didn't grow up with the Vikings, they didn't grow up with the Twins. But at some point, they became Minnesotan. They weren't move-inners anymore. It's a name that I've coined for those that came here for an opportunity.
Move-inners. All right.
Because there's the old myth that when you come to Minnesota, that we're a little bit passive-aggressive. We're a little cold to those that came here.
Well, that might be true. A little passive-aggressive, but, we're nice folks in general.
Well, we are nice folks. But there is still, I think, a level of distrust, though, I think, that when people come to the neighborhood that we're not from here. I know we're welcoming. We'll say hi to them, but do we really feel they're part of us yet? And the question I've pondered with those is, at what point do you become a Minnesotan? You came here from Lincoln, Nebraska, or you came here from Seattle, and you move here. At what point are you not a Seattlean living in Minnesota, but you become a Minnesotan who used to live in Seattle?
Maybe it's when you buy your first snow plow.
I think you know what? That's actually a good test. When you start wearing the snow boots to work.
That's how you know.
So we had a guest today that was going to talk about weather, and unfortunately, as happens often in the information business, Dennis Felkin, he had to step away for a special assignment in Florida. So I brought a good friend of the show who's been on the Stan Turner Show many times and is the first time on my show, Tom Ryther. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. I'm so proud of you having your own show here. If anybody can do a show like this, it's you, because you have more old-time broadcasting stuff in your storage room than I ever imagined.
And so my family thought the same thing on Christmas. They came and looked at what I had, and they thought I needed to go on Hoarders because there's tapes everywhere now. It did kind of explode. I have these videotapes. And the scary thing is I know which each one of them has on it. That's what's frightening me. I look at these tapes, and I can tell you what's on each one of them. But I brought Tom in today because we're going to talk a lot about some days past and some days were a few years ago and not so many few years ago. And we're going to talk about St. Louis days. We're going to talk about the Twins, talk about the Vikings, and anything else on your mind. So let's take a quick break, and we will come back and talk with Tom Ryther, formerly of KSDP and Care 11, here on Flashback Twin Cities. Flashback Twin Cities, I am Tom Osmond, joined with former KSDP and Care 11 sports director, Tom Ryther. Thanks again, Tom, for showing up today.
Good to be here. Speaking of old tapes, do you remember I met you about 4 or 5 years
right.
ago? Tom called me and he said, do you have any old tapes? And he introduced himself. And I thought, why would anybody care? And you remember that? You spent a couple of days out in my garage. We were going through boxes and stuff like that.
I'm still convinced there's more there. So I'm not done with that.
Well, you did a great job. You resurrected me. I'd forgotten about most of that stuff.
Well, you know, one of the great tapes I found, and let's just do a little background here. Tom was not from Minnesota. Tom was from St. Louis, or from around the St. Louis area. And you went to the University of Missouri, correct?
Right, I have a journalism degree, right?
Journalism degree. And you did some news anchoring, not sports anchoring, you did news anchoring in the St. Louis area.
Well, I did. My mother and I went to a movie. We're avid moviegoers in St. Louis, and we walked out of a movie in the Avalon Theater in 1948. And right next to the theater was a television shop, and there in black and white was a guy named Frank Eschen doing a newscast. And I just was mesmerized, and I looked at my mom, and I said, that's what I want to do. And I wanted to be news first, although I did have a very good sports background, all-conference baseball pitcher
right.
and played basketball and whatever. But news was my number one goal.
Well, you did news for a while. You did news at an independent station in St. Louis. That station was called?
It was KPLR-TV, which is still on the air, one of the nation's number one independent stations.
Let's take a little listen to that.
Channel 11 presents New News with Tom Reither.
Good afternoon. As we begin the big Labor Day weekend in St. Louis, news-wise, it has been quite a day as it has kept newsmen, firemen, and policemen from all over the area quite busy. First of all, an explosion this morning at the Monsanto Company's Queenie plant at 1700 South 2nd Street in St. Louis has reportedly injured 20 persons. We are now in the process of preparing a special film report, which we will have before today's new news is over.
Meanwhile, got to get that film process. We can watch that footage.
A lot of people don't realize that. I broke into television at KPLR in 1969, and back in those days, the only videotape you had was 2-inch videotape, and that was mainly for programs and mm-hmm. things like that. But you actually went out and you used a camera that shot 16-millimeter magstripe film. The magnetic stripe recorded the sound, and they were really tough to edit. Sometimes you have to have an A, B, and C roll. Everything matched. I can remember telling my cohorts, Someday this whole thing is going to turn to videotape, and they're going to be real small cameras. And we even went out, Tom, in those days, we had a Bell and Howell, and I would go out and shoot some stories with a silent Bell and Howell camera and do voiceovers.
Right. Yeah. And so you're working at an independent station in St. Louis. So you weren't working at a network affiliate. You're working at probably a smaller news organization than what one of the NBC or CBS affiliates had at that time. Correct?
Well, it was the biggest break of my life. I had done 10 years in radio, and I loved radio, still love radio. And I worked with a guy by the name of Bill Addison at WIBV Radio in Belleville, Illinois, right across the river from St. Louis. And Bill, he had a really deep, great voice, and Bill was sort of a star in his own mind. I really liked him, though. And out of the blue, when I was working on the air at WIBV and outselling advertising, doing sports at night, and covering news stories, I got a phone call from Bill in 1969, not 1869. And Bill says, would you like to come over and audition to be a news reporter? He'd just been named the new anchorman. I went over there scared to death because and KPLR, I'd always idolized that station, even though it was an independent.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the job, and my life changed. And although I loved radio, but television was just really a lot of fun, a new adventure.
And you were working in your hometown, which is not something very few people can do, where they work in your hometown, you're doing a product, you're doing what you like to do in your hometown. But you're looking for something maybe a little bit more, maybe a better opportunity, correct? And you made some tapes and you sent them out?
Well, back then, you only had ABC, NBC, and CBS.
Right.
And to work for a big network affiliate was really an honor. And I always wanted to work for a network affiliate. And I auditioned for several jobs at the big stations in St. Louis, but then I had an opportunity to send some tapes out, and one of my tapes wound up at KSTP Television here in the Twin Cities in 1971, and I was pretty lucky. From what I understand, I got the job over about I think there are like 300 tapes, so I must have done something right.
So, again, my guest is Tom Ryther, former KSTP and CARE anchor. The tape must have been a 2-inch big box of reel-to-reel tape.
It was. It cost a small fortune to mail it. But I did news mainly, but just in case, I did some sports things on the side, and I sent them both news and sports, and they picked me to be their sports guy.
So similar to what they do today, there's Magid Consulting was at KSTP, I assume.
He had just joined Hubbard in early 1970s.
So they're in a room, and they bring out hundreds of tapes, and they put these tapes in these machines, and they look at these machines from people from all across the country, small markets, big markets, medium markets. What is the team they want to look at? Because KSTP decided at the time that the team they had was going to go away. They were losing to Dave Moore, and they wanted to bring some fresh blood in to change things up.
Well, Bob Ryan was KSTP's anchor guy and one of the finest people I've ever known in my life. But the old-fashioned news, people just did the news. They looked into the camera, and then they threw it to the weather person. They threw it to the sports person, and there was no interaction, no interplay. And they wanted to, and this one good idea that Magid had, people are people. You have to have conversations. You use your hands when you're talking. And let's get people who seem like they liked each other. And that's why Dave Moore became so popular. He just was a nice guy. And he really started interactive news broadcasting here in the Twin Cities. And they knocked KSTP out of first place and sent him deep into second place. So then they replaced the whole team and brought in the younger guy.
And Stanley S. and Stanley E. do not like to lose. They like to be on top.
No,
like
absolutely. I really, truly loved, and I really mean that from the bottom of my heart, the older Hubbard. He founded that organization back in the 1920s with radio, one of the first newsrooms in the history of broadcasting. And then Mr. Hubbard used to like to call me out to play golf. And for some reason, he liked me, and I liked him, too.
That's
great. He would tell me stories, and one of the neat stories is he said nobody in the Twin Cities would loan him the money to start a television station. And he had to go to Pittsburgh to the Andrew Mellon Bank and borrow $1 million. And it was a big gamble for him. And he started KSTP television in 1947, 1948, something like
right.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did he pioneer radio, he pioneered television. And he brought an NBC. He became very close personal friends with David Sarnoff.
General Sarnoff, as he was known to the
That's
RCA.
That's right. Yeah, he was the founder of NBC. And their friendship lasted for many, many years.
Again, with Tom Ryther here, let's listen now. You come to KSTP, you leave St. Louis, and you decide to come to Minnesota. Are you crazy? It's cold here. You're away from your beloved Cardinals. What were you thinking?
You know, I had become a fan of the Minnesota Twins. I really liked Tony Oliva.
Mm-hmm.
And little did I know that I would get to know Tony. But I got the job as a sports guy, and I got here in March of 1971, and it was cold and snowing. I thought to myself, oh, my
what did I do?
God, I'll give this 6 months. I never will forget that. And then I went on the air with Ted O'Brien, Barry Zavan, and then myself doing sports.
Well, let's listen to a promo that they produced promoting Tom Ryther.
Tom Ryther is now on Channel 5 Sports. Channel 5 News, the best news source, presents sportscaster Tom Ryther on The World Today with newscaster Ted O'Brien and Barry Zivan, the weatherman. The team of teams for news, daily at 6 and 10 on Channel 5.
Well, I'm tuning in. I don't know about you, but I'm hooked.
Well, what fun that was, though. I mean, Ted and I'll never forget Ted O'Brien and Barry and I went across the street to the Schneider drugstore, and I still get my prescription drugs from Schneider, Tom Gupta, my friend originally from India. And they had a little soda fountain there, and we were having lunch, and O'Brien says, do you realize that we're the only three people in this town that believe in us? And that was about right.
Well, you were move-inners, and you took out, and they'll blame you. They don't blame management. They blame you for taking out people that they had not gotten to know since the beginning of TV.
Yeah, I felt so badly for Bob Ryan and a couple of the other guys, you know, and then in later years I had to endure that myself. And I felt very sad. And O'Brien, but Ryan went down to Rochester and had a nice career down there. But it was a changing of the guard, and that's sort of the name of the game.
Right. It happens. And if it hasn't happened yet, it's going to happen to someone. Very few people can walk out with the cake on their own terms, right?
Well, very few, actually. I'd gone, I don't know, 35 years in broadcasting without being fired. And it happened to me at Channel 11, not so much because of age, but I should say not because of my work, but because of age discrimination.
Right, right. And Hallmark case that which you won, and I think that a lot of broadcasters have thought twice about the way they, you know, conduct their personnel assignments based on that. It's
First of all, I have a lot of respect for the Gannett Corporation. I really have nothing against Channel 11 or Gannett. It was more so the news director at that time, Janet Mason.
Right.
It was bad blood between
right.
the both of us, and so I do not fault Gannett for that. I faulted her, but you know, I went on and did other things, and I had a 35-year career, and it was kind of nice to do other things.
Well, let's look at those other things. This is let's listen to a little clip we have from one of those early days in KSHP. This is delivering a sportscast, and it's following some of the formula which we talked about that the Maggid company had told you to, you know, here's how to deliver some sports.
Well, you got to see a little bit of a show tonight that I was dying to see.
I just got back, and I really enjoyed it. A lot of people down there tonight, Ron. Really, she came to delight the crowd, and she is doing just that at the St. Paul Civic Center this evening. She is Russian gymnast and Olympic champion Olga Korbut, who headlines the Superstar Gymnastics Show featuring other championship Russians and Americans. A crowd of about 11,000 enjoys Olga on the balancing beam, the first segment of her performance. The 19-year-old history major, who stands only 4 feet 10, becomes a giant, though, when the attention is focused on her. There is one footnote here based on what I saw tonight, and I don't think I'll surprise anybody by saying this, that the Russians in gymnastics are still far superior to the United States in both style and strength. This just in, the Minnesota Twins defeated Detroit tonight by a score of 3-2 out at the Met. Harmon Killebrew got the winning base hit in the 11th inning off of reliever John Hiller. Ed Brinkman had a homer for Detroit, the winner for Minnesota in relief, Billy Hands. The same two teams will go at it tomorrow night. Let's go to the scoreboard now. In the American League, Boston over Texas.
Obviously not from 2012 because the Twins won a game, and our beloved Harmon was hitting home runs.
Well, what a thrill that was for me to get to know Harmon and Tony Oliva and Frank Quillacy and some of the other guys. Because they became my favorite American League team. I remember they lost I think it was in 1969, they lost a playoff game for the American League Championship to the Boston Red Sox, and I was really sad about that. Little did I know 2 years later I'd be up here covering the Minnesota Twins. Harmon Killebrew, one of the just greatest people I've ever met in my life, and so sad when he passed away.
No, it was sad. And again, this is Tom Ryther on joining us on Flashback Twin Cities. Looking at those early days when you and Barry and Ted O'Brien came to KSDP, you were the remaining member that stayed there for a few years. Barry went to D.C. and Ted went to Boston, and then they brought in this guy, this majors guy. We've heard a couple majors have been in this town. They're not from Minnesota either.
No, both Ron and Paul Majors are from a little town in Washington, Toppenish, Washington, and they're both naturally gifted, and they've been very successful. They're still on the air. Ron works for, I think, CBS in Chicago.
WLS, actually.
WLS now.
Right.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right.
And then Paul works for CBS in Los Angeles.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, both very talented, and I was pretty lucky to get a chance to work with both of them.
So the clip we heard, that was you and Ron Majors, and I assume that Dr. Walt was doing weather that night. So you went from a move-inner team with you and Barry and Ted, and then Ron came, and your ratings went to number one. You had some 51% share of the ratings.
Huge.
Which would never happen today.
Highest ratings of any television station in the United States. Barry had gone on to Washington, D.C., and I heard on the radio the other day somebody said, well, Barry Zavan came back. He was back in those days where you didn't even know anything about weather, which is not true. Barry was a trained weather person for the United States Air Force.
Right.
And so he knew what he was talking about.
Right.
But he did shtick, and he was funny, and he was great. But then when he went on to go to Washington, D.C., they brought in Dr. Walt Lyons.
A real doctor.
He revolutionized television weather broadcasting because he had his doctorate in meteorology, and he came in with all these gadgets and the computers and stuff like that, and he changed the whole picture in this country on weather forecasting.
And the best we can tell, it was the first on-air meteorologist we had in this town that Hubbard brought in, and again took a risk and brought a guy that not because weather men at that point were either they're pitchmen, they were radio announcers, and you know Bud Crailing or Bill Carlson, you name them, they were fantastic weather communicators, but they didn't come from a weather science background.
Right. Today you can't even get a job in television unless if you have the meteorological seal or you have some kind of a degree in it. And, of course, Bud did quite well without it. Back in the old days, they relied on the weather forecast from the National Weather Service.
Right.
And the people bought you by your personality. But Walt was so – he had studied – tornadoes under the great Dr. Fujita at the University of Chicago.
Right.
And Walt was, he was really, I mean, I used to go in there and just watch him do all of his weather figures and isobars and things like that. And I learned a lot just watching him.
What, and that had been a good feeling. You're walking out of there with 51% you're making tons of money for the station, tons of money for Hubbard. How did it feel good at that point?
Well, the thing that was really neat about it is we all liked each other, too. I mean,
right.
I really liked Walt, and I liked Ron, and it just was a great team. It was like a skyrocket. We just went up like over 50% of the audience, highest ratings in the nation, as I said, and those were super days.
One thing you told me on one of our past interviews, and if you go to tcmedianow.com, we did a whole hour with Tom on video about 3 years ago, and Tom tells a lot of great stories of his early days in broadcasting and his days at Channel 5 and 11. You told me there's no teleprompters. You were providing your script straight from the desk to the camera without any teleprompters.
That amazed me. But I'd spent 10 years in radio where you work with script, and I was always a good ad-libber, probably a better ad-libber than I ever was a reader. But I was amazed when I went to KSTP television, they didn't have prompters. So, yeah, we read off the script. It was a different ball game. But then again, now, today, everything is on prompter. But you still have to have that written script and turn the pages as you go along because sometimes the prompter goes down. And when that happens, you'd better have that script in front of you. I went on the air one time. I forgot my script. Unbelievable. I was in a big rush. You always read your sportscast or newscast out loud.
Correct. Right.
I went into the makeup room or restroom or out in the parking lot, and I always read it out loud. And it's amazing what you can retain memory-wise. And I actually remembered every story in the order, not word for word, and I had lived my way through it. And then finally I looked in the camera and said, folks, did you ever have a bad day? I've just done a sportscast. I forgot to bring my script out. I just winged the whole thing. I hope it's okay with you. And it turned out to be pretty good.
Now, the shame is that video wasn't captured, so I can't post that online. That would be a great video to have. Well, Tom, rather, like any good journalist, you have to have a second job or a third job. You can't take any time off yourself. And Hubbard came to you and said, hey, do you want to host this bowling show?
Yeah, he came to me and he said, do you know anything about bowling? And St. Louis, where I grew up, was the bowling capital of the United States. In fact, the Bowling Hall of Fame is in St. Louis. And they had the St. Louis Budweisers down there, one of the greatest bowling teams of all time. Was I a good bowler? No, but I used to set pins at St. George's Bowling Alley. And I was a lousy bowler, but I thought, okay, so they sent me to Baltimore. And to go into training to do Bowling for Dollars.
And Bowling for Dollars was a franchise show. It was like Bozo. There was a Bowling for Dollars in every big market, including the big ones, including New York and Chicago. This was everywhere. And Hubbard had it for a few years and decided to revamp it a bit. And if you look at – if you go to YouTube, there's a whole bunch of Bowling for Dollars video out there. It all looks the same. Claster, who created that, and I think it's owned by Hasbro now, actually – because you and I did this revival a few years ago. Which was fantastic, and we will do it again if I can get the right.
That was so fun, except for the fact that I had 102 fever that night. But I wouldn't have let you down for anything. I said I can't. Tom's put all this work into the thing, and we winged our way through it, and that was so fun. I didn't think anybody was going to be there. The place was packed,
including myself, who produced it. No, we did. When I put these videos from Tom's Garage on my website, the video which I was this floored me. Bowling for Dollars got more hits than any. I put all this great news and this great history, this history video, all this intellectual stuff. I thought that I was going to get lots of comments on. No, Bowling for Dollars got more comments and more questions than anything I had put up. And to this day, I still get people asking for their specific episode of Bowling for Dollars. And I wish I had it, but as you know, tape was expensive. I think you had three. I found one or two more in my digging. And a couple I've saved for another live event we'll show someday.
Do you want some inside word on that one?
I do.
I did over 400 of those shows, and they unbelievable ratings. We were all shocked. I was getting paid $30 a show.
Sure.
And as the ratings went up, they paid me more. The most I ever made was $250 a show. But I met the Magid people, who meant well. They wanted me to do commentaries on my sportscasts. Well, who am I, being a newcomer into the market, to sit there and give commentaries? And I was never like that. It's not my job to do a hatchet job on anybody. But I did it anyway because I thought, well, they know more than I do. And I had public opinion polls that, I tell you, I was about in the gutter someplace. I mean, people hated me. I would go in to have lunch or dinner someplace, and I had people come up wanting to argue with me, and one guy wanted to fight me one night. Oh, my goodness. So finally, they came close to firing me because my public ratings were not good. And then finally, I talked to Magid, and I went down to Cedar Rapids, and I told him, I said, I'm not doing any more commentaries. I will not do any more. But Bowling for Dollars saved my job because on one side they saw the real Tom Ryther,
right,
who's out there having fun and enjoying himself, and then the other guy who was a jerk telling everybody how to think and giving commentaries. But once I stopped that, my popularity went up. At one time I had a 90% approval rating on TV, and that was because Bowling for Dollars saved my job.
It's better than most of our elected officials, which is pretty good. But your approval rating, you got to keep that above that 50% mark.
Yeah. Well, I was way above that, thank goodness.
No, and it's interesting that it was a beloved show, and I assume that people still say to you when they see you and they know who you are,
still do.
I watched you in Bowling for Dollars, and I was on the show, and we had a guy when we did the – so just a little backstory here. When I received so many hits and inquiries of Bowling for Dollars, we couldn't get the tapes back, but I thought let's do a new one. Let's just make a new one. So at the Bryan Lake Bowl, 3 years ago, it was February 2010, Tom was nice enough to come down and host Bowling for Dollars again, 25, 30
years. It was fun. It was the fact that I was sick, but it was fun.
No, it was great. In fact, we sold out, and we had lots of prizes, and people were really fascinated by it. We showed some old video, and people were cheering and applauding. We had a guy that was 90 years old bowling, and he had been on the show the first time.
I'll still run into people who've been on that show. I did over 400 shows, and I think something like 2,000 or 3,000 different contestants. And I still run into people who had been contestants on that show.
Well, let's listen to a commercial for Bowling for Dollars that aired on KHTP in 1972.
He fires. The ball is hooking a little bit past. He got it! He got it! He got it!
Join Tom Ryther for the fun and excitement of Bowling for Dollars tonight at 6:30 here on Channel 5.
That guy won $3,000, which in 1972 dollars had to be at least, what, $6,000, $7,000?
Oh, it was huge. I'll never forget. The guy's last name, the biggest winner, won over $4,000. Thorson was his last name. After all these years, I can remember his last name. And he was handicapped a little bit. But you had to get two strikes in a row to win the big jackpot.
Right, right.
And we taped those shows. We taped them on Sunday mornings. We'd do four shows and sometimes six. And finally I said, I can't do six because after four shows, your mind gets numb after about four shows. But that was one of the most exciting moments I'd ever had to see that young guy, Thorson, his last name, to win at over $4,000.